Chapter 13. Doom Room. Agatha had no idea why lunch was a joint school activity, because Evers sat with Evers, Nevers sat with Nevers, and both groups pretended the other wasn't there. Lunch took place in the clearing, an intimate picnic field outside the Blue Forest gates. To get to the clearing, students had to journey through twisty tunnels of trees that grew narrower and narrower, until one by one the children spat through a hollowed trunk onto emerald grass. As soon as Agatha came through the good tunnel, she followed the line of Evers, receiving picnic baskets from nymphs in red hoods, while Nevers from the evil tunnel took rusty pails from red-suited wolves. Agatha found a shady patch of grass and reached into her willow basket to find a lunch of smoked trout sandwiches, rampion salad, strawberry souffle, and a vial of sparkling lemon water. She let thoughts of riddles and dead ends fall away as she opened her watering mouth to the sandwich. Sophie swiped it. "You don't know what I've been through," she sobbed, scarfing it whole. "Here's yours." She plunked down a pail of gruel. Agatha stared at her. "Look, I asked," Sophie garbled between bites. "Apparently, Nevers need to learn deprivation. Part of your training. This is lovely, by the way." Agatha was still staring. "What?" Sophie said. "Do I have blood on my teeth? Because I thought I got it all..." Over Agatha's shoulder, she saw Tedros and his friends pointing and snickering. "Oh, no," Sophie groaned. "What did you do now?" Agatha kept gaping at her. "If you're going to be a brat about it, you can have the souffle," Sophie frowned. "Why is that strange imp waving at me?" Agatha turned and saw Kiko across the clearing, waving and flaunting newly red hair. It was the exact same color as Tristan's. Agatha's face went white. "You know her?" Sophie said, watching Kiko giddily approach Tristan. "We're friends," Agatha said, waving Kiko away from him. "You have a friend?" Sophie said. Agatha turned to her. "Why do you keep looking at me like that?" Sophie yelled. "You haven't been eating candy, have you?" "Huh?" Sophie shrieked, realizing. Her hand flew up and ripped Lesso's wart off her face. "Why didn't you tell me?" she cried, as Tedros and boys exploded into whoops. "Oh, it can't get any worse," Sophie moaned. Hort picked up her discarded wart and ran away with it. Sophie looked at Agatha. Agatha cracked a smile. "It's not funny," Sophie wailed. But Agatha was laughing, and so was Sophie. "What do you think he'll do with it?" Agatha sniggered. Sophie stopped laughing. "We need to get home. Now." Agatha told Sophie about all her frustration solving the riddle, including her dead end with Professor Seder. Before she could even try to ask about his paintings, Seder had taken off to meet his evil students, leaving three geriatric pigs to lecture about the importance of fortifying one's houses. "He's the only one who can help us," said Agatha. "Better hurry. My days are numbered," Sophie said glumly, and recounted everything that had happened with her roommates, including their prediction of Sophie's doom. "You die? That doesn't make any sense. You can't be the villain in our story if we're friends." "That's why the schoolmaster said we can't be friends," Sophie replied. "Something has to come between us. Something that answers the riddle." "What could possibly come between us?" Agatha said, still at a loss. "Maybe it's all connected, this thing that good has and evil doesn't. Do you think it's why good always wins?" "Evil used to win, according to Lady Lesso, but now good has something that beats them all." "But the schoolmaster forbade us to return to his tower, so the answer to the riddle isn't a word or a thing or an idea. We have to do something," Now we're getting somewhere. First, it's something that can turn us against each other. Second, it's something that beats evil every time. And third, it's something we can physically do. The girls spun to each other. I got it, said Agatha. Me too, said Sophie. It's so obvious. So obvious. It's... No idea, Agatha said. Me either, sighed Sophie. Across the field, Everboys slowly trespassed into Evergirl territory. Girls waited like flowers to be picked, only to see Beatrix attract the lion's share. As Beatrix flirted with her suitors, Tedros fidgeted on a tree stump. Finally, he stood up, shoved in front of the other boys, and asked Beatrix to take a walk. He was supposed to rescue me, Sophie whimpered, watching them go. Sophie, we have the chance to save our village from a 200-year-old curse, to rescue children from beatings and failings, to escape wolves, waves, gargoyles, and everything else in this awful school, and to end a story that will kill you. And you're thinking about a boy. I wanted my happy ending, Aggie, Sophie said, tears sparkling. Getting home alive is our happy ending, Sophie. Sophie nodded, but her eyes never left Tedros.
Welcome to Good Deeds, said Professor Dovey to students gathered in the Purity Common Room. Now we're behind your other subjects, so we'll dispense with the usual pleasantries. Let me begin by saying that over the years, I've seen a disturbing decrease in esteem for this class.
Because it's after lunch, Tedros whispered into Agatha's ear. And you're talking to me why? Seriously, what witchy spell did you put on me to make me choose your goblin? Agatha didn't turn. You did something, Tedros fumed. Tell me.
Can't divulge a witch's secrets, Agatha said, gazing ahead.
Knew it.
Tedros saw Professor Dovey glaring and flashed her a cocksure smile. She rolled her eyes and went on. He leaned over again to Agatha.
Tell me, and my boys will leave you alone.
Does that include you?
Just tell me what you did.
Agatha exhaled. I used the Hopscottle spell, a potent hex from the Gavaldonic witches of Reapercat. They're a small coven on the shores of the Callous River, not just expert spellcasters, but also great harvesters of...
What you did.
Well, said Agatha, turning to him, the Hopscottle spell worms its way into your brain like a swarm of leeches. It swims its way into every cranny, breeding, multiplying, festering for just the right moment. And just when it hooks into your every nook and crevice, sft, it sucks you of every intelligent thought and leaves you dumb as a donkey's ass. Tedros went red.
One more thing. It's permanent, Agatha said, and turned back around.
While Tedros mumbled about hangings, stonings, and the other ways his father punished wicked women, Agatha listened to Professor Dovey justify the importance of good deeds.
Every time you do a good deed with true intention, your soul grows purer. Though lately my good students have been doing them as if they were chores, preferring to cultivate their egos, arrogance, and waist size. Let me assure you, our winning streak can end at any time.
Not if the schoolmaster controls the Storian, said Agatha.
Agatha, the schoolmaster has absolutely no role in how the stories play out, Professor Dovey said impatiently. He cannot control the Storian.
He seemed pretty good at magic to me, Agatha replied.
Excuse me?
He can split into shadows. He can make a room disappear. He can make it all seem like a dream. So surely he can control a pen.
And how might you know all this? Professor Dovey sighed.
Agatha saw Tedros smirking. "Because he showed me," she said. Tedros's smirk vanished. Professor Dovey looked like a kettle about to steam. Students glanced nervously between her and Agatha. Their teacher smiled tightly.
"Oh, Agatha, what an imagination you have. It will serve you well when you're waiting for someone to rescue you from a ravenous dragon. Let's hope he arrives in time. Now, the three keys to good deeds are creativity, feasibility, and spontaneity."
Agatha opened her mouth, but Professor Dovey silenced her with a glare. Knowing she was on shaky ground, Agatha pulled out parchment and took notes with the rest. Before surviving fairy tales, the students of both schools found themselves summoned to an assembly in the clearing. As soon as Agatha popped through the tree tunnel, Kiko grabbed her.
"Tristan changed his hair."
Agatha glanced over at Tristan leaning against a tree. His hair was blonde now, drooping over one eye. He reminded her of someone.
"He said he did it for Beatrix," Kiko wailed, hair still hideously red.
Agatha followed Tristan's eyes to Beatrix, who was jabbering to Tedros. Tedros couldn't have been less enthused and puffed at the blonde bangs drooping over his. Agatha coughed. She looked back at Tristan, puffing at his droopy blonde bangs. Then at Tedros, who had two shirt buttons undone and his tie loosened with its golden T. Then at Tristan, who had undone two buttons and loosened his tie with its golden T.
"What if I'm blonde like Beatrix?" Kiko hounded. "Then will Tristan like me?"
Agatha turned. "You need to find a new crush immediately."
"Attention!"
She looked up to find the entire faculty fanned between the two tunnels, including Castor and Pollux, whose heads had been reunited on their canine body. Professor Dovey stepped forward.
"There's been some..."
"Move your hides, you lazy cows!"
Castor barked. The last Nevers hurried from their tunnel, with Sophie stumbling out last. She gave Agatha a confused look across the clearing. Agatha shrugged back. Professor Dovey opened her mouth to resume.
"Presenting Clarissa Dovey, Dean of the School for Good and Professor Emeritus of Good Deeds," said Castor.
"Thank you, Castor," said Professor Dovey.
"Any interruptions or misbehavior will be swiftly punished."
"Thank you, Castor," Professor Dovey shrieked.
Castor stared at his feet. Professor Dovey cleared her throat.
"Students, we have called you here because there have been some unfortunate rumors. Lies, as I call them,"
said Lady Lesso. Agatha recognized her as the teacher who had ripped down Seda's painting in the Gallery of Good.
"So, let us be clear," Professor Dovey continued. "First, there is no curse on evil. Evil still has the power to defeat good."
"Provided evil does their homework," Professor Manley growled.
Nevers muttered, as if they didn't believe this for a second.
"Second, the schoolmaster is on no one's side," said Professor Dovey.
"How do you know?" Robin shouted.
"Why should we believe you?" Hester yelled as Nevers catcalled.
"Because we have proof."
Professor Seda stepped forward. Nevers went quiet. Agatha's eyes widened.
Proof? What proof?
Then she noticed Lady Lesso looked especially sour, confirming this proof did in fact exist. Was the proof the answer to the riddle?
"Last but not least," said Professor Dovey, "the schoolmaster's primary responsibility is to protect the Storian. For that reason, he remains in his well-fortressed tower. Thus, regardless of the tales you may hear, let me assure you,
No student has ever seen the schoolmaster, and no student ever will.
Eyes fell on Agatha.
Ah, is this the storyteller?
Lady Leso leered.
It's not a story, Agatha shot back. She saw Sophie shake her head to say this was an ill-advised battle.
Lady Leso smiled.
I'll give you one more chance to redeem yourself. Did you meet the schoolmaster?
Agatha looked at the evil teacher, purple eyes bulging like marbles, then at Professor Seder, smiling at her curiously, then at Sophie, across the clearing, miming wart gluing, mouth zipping. Yes.
You lie to a teacher?
Lady Leso lashed.
It's not a lie, a voice shouted.
Everyone turned to Sophie.
We were both there. We were in his tower.
And I bet you saw the Storian, too,
Beatrix sneered.
Matter of fact, we did,
Sophie retorted to laughter.
And did it start your fairy tale, too?
It did. It did start our fairy tale.
All hail the Queen of Fools,
Beatrix proclaimed to roars. Then you must be the Grand Empress. Beatrix turned to Agatha, arms akimbo.
Ugh, the mistake,
Beatrix groaned.
Good has never been so wrong.
You wouldn't know good if it crawled up your dress, Agatha yelled. Beatrix gasped so loudly, Tedros cracked a grin.
Don't talk to Beatrix that way, a voice said.
Agatha turned to find blonde-haired Tristan.
Beatrix,
Agatha exploded.
You sure you don't want Tedros? He'd love to marry himself.
Tedros stopped smiling. Dumbstruck, he glanced between Agatha, Tristan, Beatrix. He lost patience and punched Tristan in the mouth. Tristan drew his dulled training sword, Tedros whipped out his, and they clashed in public duel. But Tristan had been studying Tedros in swordplay, so they both used the exact same ripostes, the same retreats, even the same fight calls, until no one knew who was who. Rather than intervene, swordplay Professor Espada twirled his long moustache.
We'll dissect this thoroughly in class tomorrow.
The Nevers had a more immediate response.
Fight!
Ruven roared. Nevers rushed Evers, steamrolled stunned wolves, and dive-bombed into the dueling swordsmen. Whooping Everboys charged in, inciting an epic playground brawl that splattered Evergirls with mud. Agatha couldn't help but laugh at girls brought to their knees by dirt, until filthy Beatrix pointed at her.
She started it!
Screaming Evergirls charged after Agatha, who climbed a tree. Nearby, Tedros managed to reach his head from under Boys and saw Sophie spring past.
Help!
He yelled. Sophie stepped on his head as she ran to help Agatha, who was being pelted with pebbles by Beatrix. Then she caught Hort out of the corner of her eye.
You! Give me back my wart!
Hort scooted around the brawling mass, Sophie in pursuit, until she got close enough to pick up a fallen branch and hurl it at his head. Hort ducked, and it hit Lady Leso in the face. Students froze. Lady Leso touched her cold, gashed cheek. Staring at the blood on her hand, she grew eerily calm. Her long red nail rose and pointed at Agatha.
Lock her in her tower!
A swarm of fairies seized Agatha and dragged her past smirking Tedros towards the Evers tunnel.
No, it's my fault,
Sophie cried.
And this one?
Lady Leso stabbed her blood-stained finger at Sophie.
To the doom room!
Before Sophie could scream, a claw covered her mouth and pulled her, past petrified classmates, into the darkness of trees. Sophie couldn't live through torture. Sophie couldn't survive true evil. As fairies flew her upstairs, Agatha welled panicked tears and glanced down to see teachers surging into the foyer. "Professor Seder," she cried, clinging to a banister, "you have to believe us. The Storian thinks Sophie's a villain. It's going to kill her."
Seder and 20 teachers looked up, alarmed.
"How do you see our village?" Agatha yelled as fairies wrested her away. "How do we get home? What does a princess have that a villain doesn't?"
Seder smiled. "Questions. Always in threes." Teachers chuckled and dispersed.
"Seen the Storian?" Espada mused. "She's the one who eats candy,"
Professor Anemone explained.
"No! You have to save her," Agatha begged, but the fairies dragged her to her room and locked her in. Frantic, she scaled her bed canopy past paintings of lip-locked heroes and lunged for the broken ceiling tile. But it wasn't broken anymore. Someone had sealed it, tight.
Blood drained from Agatha's cheeks. Seder was her only hope, and he refused to answer questions. Now her only friend would die in that dungeon, all because a magic pen had mistaken a princess for a witch. Then something flashed in her head. Something Seder said in class. "If you do have questions..." Breathless, Agatha emptied her basket of school books. A grey wolf, stoic and efficient, tugged Sophie by a long chain fixed to a tight iron collar around her neck. Skirting the dank sewer walls, she couldn't fight her leash. One wrong step, and she'd slip off the narrow path into roaring sludge. Across the rotted black river, she saw two wolves drag moaning Vex from the direction in which she was headed. His eyes met hers, red-rimmed, hateful. Whatever happened to him in the Doom Room had left him more a villain than when he entered. "Agatha," Sophie told herself, "Agatha will get us home." She bit back tears. "Stay alive for Agatha." As she approached the sewer's halfway point, where sludge turned to clear lake water, she felt the wall's solid stone become rusty grating. The wolf kicked the door open and shoved her in. Sophie lifted her head to a dark dungeon, lit by a single torch. Everywhere she looked were tools of punishment: breaking wheel, rack, stocks, nooses, hooks, garrote, Iron Maiden, thumbscrews, and a terrifying collection of spears, clubs, rods, whips, and knives. Her heart stopped. She turned away. Two red eyes glowed from the corner. Slowly, a big, black wolf rose from shadows, twice the size of all the other wolves, but this one had a human's body with a thick, hairy chest, sinewy arms, bulging calves, and massive feet. The beast cracked open a scroll of parchment and read in a deep growl, "You, Sophie of Woods Beyond, have hereby been summoned to the Doom Room for the following sins: conspiracy to commit untruth, disruption of assembly, attempted murder of a faculty member..."
"Murder?" Sophie gasped.
"Incitement of public riots, crossing of boundary lines during assembly, destruction of school property, harassment of fellow students, and crimes against humanity."
"I plead not guilty to all charges," Sophie scowled, "especially the last."
The beast seized her face in his claws.
"Guilty until proven innocent."
"Let go!"
Sophie screamed. He sniffed her neck.
"Aren't you a luscious peach?"
You'll leave marks.
To her surprise, the beast released her.
It usually takes a beating to find the weak spot.
Sophie looked at the beast, confused. He licked his lips and grinned. With a cry, she lunged for the door. He slammed her to the wall and cuffed her arms to hooks above her head.
Let me go!
The beast slunk along the wall, hunting for just the right punishment.
Please, whatever I did, I'm sorry, Sophie wailed.
Villains don't learn from apologies, the beast said.
Considered a cudgel for a moment, then moved on.
Villains learn from pain.
Please, someone help me.
Pain makes you stronger, said the beast.
He caressed the tip of a rusty spear, then hung it back up.
Help!
Sophie shrieked.
Pain makes you grow.
The beast picked out an axe. Sophie's face went ghost white. He walked up to her, axe handle in his meaty claw.
Pain makes you evil.
He took her hair in his hands.
No,
Sophie choked. The beast raised the axe.
Please!
The blade slashed through her hair. Sophie stared at her long, beautiful gold locks on the black dungeon floor. Mouth froze open in silence. Slowly, she raised her terrorized face to meet the big black beast's. Then her lips quivered, her body hung from its chains, and the tears came. She buried her shorn, jagged head in her chest and cried. She cried until her nose stuffed up and she couldn't breathe, spit caking her black tunic, wrists bleeding against her cuffs. A lock snapped. Sophie lifted her raw red eyes to see the beast unhook her from the wall.
Get out,
he growled, and hung the axe up. When he turned, Sophie was gone. The beast lumbered out of the cell and knelt at the midpoint between rolling muck and clean water. As he dipped the bloody chains in, currents smashed from both directions, rinsing them clean. Scrubbing the last spots of blood away, he caught his reflection in the sludge, only it wasn't his. The beast spun. Sophie shoved him in. The beast thrashed in water and slime, grunting and flailing for the wall. The tides were too strong. She watched him gurgle his last breaths and sink like a stone. Sophie smoothed her hair and walked towards the light, swallowing the sickness in her throat. The good forgive, said the rules. But the rules were wrong. They had to be. Because she hadn't forgiven. She hadn't forgiven at all. Chapter 14. The Crypt Keeper's Solution. The cover was silver silk, painted with the glowing Storion clutched between black and white swans. A Student's History of the Woods, August A. Seder. Agatha opened to the first page. This book reflects the views of its author only. Professor Seder's interpretation of history is his alone, and the faculty does not share it. Sincerely, Clarissa Dovey and Lady Lesso, Deans of the School for Good and Evil. Agatha felt encouraged that the faculty disapproved of the book in her hands. It gave her more hope that somewhere in these pages was the answer to the riddle. The difference between a princess and a witch. The proof good and evil were balanced. Could they be the same? She flipped the page to start, but it didn't have words. Splashed across it were patterns of embossed dots in a rainbow of colours, small as pinheads. Agatha turned the page, More dots. She tore through fistfuls of pages. No words at all. She dumped her face to the book in frustration. Seda's voice boomed.
Chapter 14, The Great War.
Agatha lurched up. Before her eyes, a ghostly, three-dimensional scene melted into view atop the book page. A living diorama, colours gauzy like Seda's paintings in the gallery. She crouched to watch a silent vision unfold of three wizened old men, beards to the floor, standing in the schoolmaster's tower with hands united. As the old men opened their hands, the gleaming Staurian levitated out of them and over a familiar white stone table. Seda's disembodied voice continued.
Now, remember from chapter one. The Staurian was placed at the school for good and evil by the three seers of the endless woods, who believed it the only place it could be protected from corruption.
Agatha gawked in disbelief. Sightless Seda couldn't write history, but he could see it, and wanted the same for his students. Every time she turned a page and touched the dots, living history came alive to his narration. Most of chapter 14 recounted what Sophie had told her at lunch, that the school had been ruled by two sorcerer brothers, one good, one evil, whose love for each other overcame their loyalties to either side. But in time, the evil brother found love give way to temptation, until he saw only one obstacle between him and the pen's infinite power, his own blood. Agatha's hands swept over dots, scanning exhaustive scenes of great war battles, alliances, betrayals to see how it all ended. Her fingers stopped as she watched a familiar figure in silver robes and mask rise out of the burning carnage of battle, Staurian in hand. From the final fight between evil brother and good brother, a victor emerged, beholden to neither side. In the great truce, the triumphant schoolmaster vowed to rise above good and evil and protect the balance for as long as he could keep himself alive. Neither side trusted the victor, of course, but they didn't need to. The scene flashed to the dying brother, burning to ashes as he desperately stabbed his hand into the sky, unleashing a burst of silver light. For the dying brother, used his final embers of magic to create a last spell against his twin, a way to prove good and evil still equal. As long as this proof stayed intact, then the Staurian remained uncorrupted and the woods in perfect balance. And as to what this proof is, Agatha's heart leapt. It remains in the school for good and evil to this very day. The scene went dark. She turned the page urgently, touched the dots. Seda's voice boomed.
Chapter 15. The Woods-Wide Roach Plague.
Agatha flung the book against the wall. Then the others, leaving cracks in painted couples' faces. When there were no more to throw, she buried her face in the bed.
Please, help us.
Then, in the silence between prayers and tears, something came. Not even a thought. An impulse. Agatha lifted her head. The answer to the riddle looked back at her. It's just a haircut, Sophie told herself as she climbed through a cornflower thicket. No one will even notice. She slid between two periwinkle trees into the west clearing, approaching her group from behind. Just find Agatha and... The group all turned at once. No one laughed. Not Dot, not Tedros, not even Beatrix. They gaped with such horror, Sophie couldn't breathe.
Excuse me, something in my eye.
She ducked behind a blue rose bush and gulped for air. She couldn't bear any more humiliation.
Least you look like a never-now. Tedros said,
bobbing behind the bush, so no one makes my mistake.
Sophie turned beet red.
Well, this is what happens when you're friends with a witch, the prince frowned.
Now Sophie was a pomegranate.
Look, it's not that bad. Not as bad as your friend, at least.
Excuse me, said Sophie, eggplant purple. Something in my other eye.
She darted out and grabbed Dot like a life raft.
Where's Agatha?
But Dot was still staring at her hair. Sophie cleared her throat.
They haven't let her out of her room, Dot said. Too bad she'll miss the flower ground. If Uber can call the conductor, that is.
She nodded at the gnome, grumpily jabbing at a blue pumpkin patch. Dot's eyes drifted back to Sophie's hair.
It's nice. Please don't, Sophie said softly.
Dot's eyes misted.
You were so pretty.
It'll grow back, Sophie said, trying not to cry.
Don't worry, Dot sniffled. One day, someone evil enough will kill that monster.
Sophie stiffened.
All aboard,
Uba called. She turned to see Tedros open the top of an ordinary blue pumpkin like a teapot and vanish inside. Sophie squinted.
What in the...
Something poked her hip and she looked down. Uba thrust a flower-ground pass at her and opened the pumpkin lid, revealing a thin caterpillar in a violet velvet tuxedo and matching top hat, floating in a swirl of pastel colours.
No spitting, sneezing, singing, sniffling, swinging, swearing, slapping, sleeping or urinating in the flower ground, he said, in the crabbiest voice imaginable. Violations will result in removal of your clothes. All aboard.
Sophie whipped to Uba.
Wait, I need to find my friend.
A vine shot up and yanked her in. Too stunned to scream, she plunged through dazzling pinks, blues, yellows, as more tendrils lashed and fastened around her like safety belts. Sophie heard a hiss and wheeled to see a giant green flytrap swallow her. She found her scream before vines jerked her out of its mouth and into a tunnel of hot, blinding mist, and hooked her onto something that kept her moving while her feet and arms dangled freely in the ivy harness. Then the mist cleared, and Sophie saw the most magical thing she'd ever seen. It was an underground transport system, big as a whole village, made entirely of luminescent plants. Dangling passengers hung onto vine straps attached to glowing, different-coloured tree trunks covered in matching flowers. These colour-coded trunks wove together in a colossal maze of tracks. Some trunks ran parallel, some perpendicular, some forked in different directions, but all took riders to their precise destinations in the endless woods. Sophie stared in shock at a row of unsmiling dwarves, pickaxes in belts, clinging to straps off a fluorescent red trunk labelled Rosalinda Line. Running in the opposite direction was the glittery green Arborea Line, with a family of bears in crisp suits and dresses among the riders hanging off shamrock vines. Flabbergasted, Sophie peered down her hibiscus line to see the rest of her group swinging from an electric blue trunk. But only the nevers were strapped into harnesses.
Flower grounds only for evers, Dot called out. They have to let us on because we're with the school, but they still don't trust us.
Sophie didn't care. She would ride the flower ground for the rest of her life if she could. Besides its strong, soothing pace and delicious scents, there was an orchestra of lizards for each line. The tangerine line lizards strummed bouncy banjo guitars. The violet line ones played sultry sitars. And the lizards on Sophie's line piped up-tempo jingles on piccolos, accompanied by caroling blue frogs. Lest riders grow hungry, each line had its own snacks, with bluebirds fluttering along the hibiscus line offering blue corn muffins and blueberry punch. For once, Sophie had all she needed. Muscles unclenching, she forgot about boys and beasts as vines pulled her up,
up into a churning wind wheel of blue light. Her body felt wind, then air, then earth, and arms unfurling into the sky, Sophie bloomed out of the ground like a heavenly hyacinth, and found herself in a graveyard. Headstones the colour of the bleak sky swept over barren hills. Shivering classmates spouted from a hole in the ground next to her. "Where are we?" she stammered through chattering teeth. "Garden of good and evil," Dot shivered, nibbling a chocolate lizard. "Doesn't look like a garden to me," Sophie chattered back. Warmth thawed her skin as Yuba sparked a few small fires around the group with his magical staff. Sophie and her classmates exhaled.
"In a few weeks, you will each be unlocked to perform spells," said the gnome to excited titters. "But spells are no substitute for survival skills. Mealworms live near graves and can keep you alive when food is scarce. Today, you'll be finding and eating them."
Sophie clutched her stomach.
"Off you go, teams of two," the gnome said. "Whichever team eats the most mealworms wins the challenge."
His eyes flicked to Sophie.
"Perhaps our black sheep can find redemption."
"Black sheep can't find anything without her girlfriend," Tedros murmured. Sophie moped miserably as he paired up with Beatrix. "Come on," Dot said, pulling Sophie to the ground. "We can beat them." Suddenly motivated, Sophie started searching the ground with Dot, careful to stay close to the fire. "What do mealworms look like?"
"Like worms," said Dot.
Sophie was deliberating a retort when she noticed a figure in the distance, silhouetted atop a hill. It was a massive giant, with a long black beard, thick dreadlocks, and midnight blue skin. He wore only a small brown loincloth as he dug a row of graves.
"Does it all himself, the crypt keeper," Dot said to Sophie. "That's why there's such a backlog."
Sophie followed her eyes to a 2-mile line of bodies and coffins behind the crypt keeper, waiting for burial. Immediately, she could see the difference between the Nevers' dark stone coffins and the Evers' coffins, made of glass and gold. But there were also some bodies without caskets, just lying untended on the hill slope beneath circling vultures.
"Why doesn't he have help?"
she said, nauseous.
"'Cause no one can interfere with the crypt keeper's system," Hort said softly.
2 years my dad's waited."
His voice cracked.
"Killed by Peter Pan himself, my dad. Deserves a proper grave."
Now the whole group was watching the crypt keeper dig his graves before pulling a big book from his mass of hair and studying one of its pages. Then the giant picked up a gold coffin with a handsome prince inside and heaved it into the empty plot. He moved down the line of waiting bodies, picked up a crystal coffin with a beautiful princess, and laid it beside the prince's coffin in the same grave.
"Anastasia and Jacob. Died of starvation while on honeymoon. Avoidable deaths had they paid attention in class,"
Yuba snapped. Grumbling, the students went back to mealworm hunting. But Sophie kept her eye on the crypt keeper, who studied his book again before picking up a coffinless ogre and plunking him in the next plot. Back to the book, and then he rested a resplendent queen's silver tomb beside a matching king's. Sophie's eyes drifted around the graveyard and saw the same pattern on every hill and valley. Evers buried together with twin headstones, boy and girl, man and wife, prince and princess, together in life and in death. Nevers buried all alone. Ever after, paradise together. Nevermore, paradise alone. Sophie froze. She knew the answer to the schoolmaster's riddle.
"Perhaps we should search Necro Ridge," Yuba sighed. "Come, students."
"Cover for me,"
Sophie whispered to Dot. Dot swiveled. Where are you? Wait! We're a... But Sophie was scampering through distant gravestones towards the flower ground entrance. Team, Dot sulked. A short while later, in the blue forest, five stimps looked up from their billy goat to see Sophie brandishing an egg.
Let's try this again, shall we?
It was there all along, Agatha thought as she gazed at the walls. The weapon that made good invincible against evil. The thing a villain could never have, but a princess couldn't do without. The task that would send her and Sophie home. If Sophie is alive. Agatha felt another wave of powerless dread. She couldn't just sit here while Sophie was being tortured. Screams pealed outside. She spun to see Sophie hurled through her window by a bucking stimpf.
Love! Sophie panted. You're alive! Your hair! Agatha gasped. Love is what a villain can never have, but a heroine can't live without.
But what did they... Are you...
Am I right or not?
Agatha saw Sophie had no intention of talking about the Doom Room. Almost. She pointed to the paintings on the wall, with visions of heroes and heroines, lips pressed in climactic embrace. True love's kiss, Sophie breathed. If your true love kisses you, then you can't be a villain, Agatha said.
And if you can't find love, then you can't be a princess, said Sophie.
And we go home, Agatha swallowed. My half is taken care of. Yours isn't so simple.
Oh, please. I can make any one of those disgusting never-boys fall in love with me. Just give me 5 minutes, an empty broom closet, and...
There's only one, Sophie, Agatha said, voice fraying. For every ever, there's only one true love. Sophie met her eyes. She collapsed onto the bed.
Tedros.
Agatha nodded sickly. The road home led through the one person who could ruin everything.
Tedros has to... kiss me, Sophie said, staring into space.
And he can't be tricked, forced, or duped into it. He has to mean it.
But how? He thinks I'm a villain. He hates me. Aggie, he's a king's son. He's beautiful. He's perfect. And look at me...
She grabbed her shorn hair and flaccid robes.
I'm...
Still a princess. Sophie looked at her. And the only way we'll get home, said Agatha, forcing a smile. So we have to make this kiss happen.
We, said Sophie.
We, rasped Agatha. Sophie hugged her tight.
We're going home, Aggie.
But in her arms, Agatha sensed something else. Something that told her the Doom Room had taken more from her friend than just her hair. Agatha squelched her doubts and clasped Sophie tighter. One kiss and it will all be over, she whispered. As they embraced in one tower, in another, the schoolmaster watched the Storian finish a magnificent painting of the two girls in each other's arms. The pen added a last flourish of words beneath it, closing the chapter. But no kiss comes without its price.